Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Morning, Francis.
How are you this morning?
I'm very well.
I am, too.
You got your loud on? What's with you, all right?
Good news.
Tell me the news.
It turns out that workers out of Spain have determined that a pint of beer after a workout does a better job of rehydrating your body than a glass of water.
I'm sure they're right.
I knew that damn water wasn't any good anyway.
Beer is better. That's a really simple, simple factor.
Well, you know, I got this from a blog. And then I clicked on the links and followed through, and there actually is research out there that says it's better.
No, you mean it's just not something that somebody put up there and said...
No, it's really good.
Beware of what you're reading on the internet, because it just might be false. Just completely false.
You know, here's the deal. The alcohol doesn't necessarily have the rehydrating effect, and if, as a matter of fact...
As a dehydrating
dehydrates
effect.
Dehydrates you. But beer is, you know, many beers are relatively low in alcohol, 3 or 4%, and they have a lot of nutrients in them. You know, beer is... beer is an important part of... beer's an important part of nutrition in American and European history. It does replenish you. There's a lot of good stuff in beer. But beer for a long time was how people drank because you didn't want to drink the water. We have this idea that, you know, it's wholesome to drink water and we should drink water. Reliable, good, pure water is a relatively recent luxury in human history.
Well, I will tell you something, and this is a real, you know, anecdotal evidence herein. I used to sometimes have a beer during a workout when I was working out, have a beer during the workout in place of water, and I will tell you that my performance went up when I had beer over water, and I'm sure that it's
at least you thought it did.
You've heard of beer muscles. There you go. There they are. Seriously, water is a rehydrator. That's true. But when we sweat, we don't just lose water. We lose other things as well. And that's why we drink things like sports drinks and things like that that will replenish salt and some of the other nutrients that we lose while we're working out.
I think what's interesting is I got this. This was sent to us by a listener on a blog, and then I did follow through and find the research. So there really is such a study. But what I think is interesting about when I read things in the blogs, and the food blogs especially, is the way a blog works is there's a posting, and then people can comment on that posting, and there's a long string of how people comment on it.
Sometimes there's very intelligent comments.
And sometimes people are ninnies. here's the best. So here are the reader comments. Are you kidding me? Have a drink of alcohol after a workout? That's the most unhealthy thing I could think of doing to my body. Health is about keeping the body and mind alert and fit, so they want me to grab a pint of beer after a workout? One leads to another with my buddies, and then we're buzzed. Not a bright move. One leads to another with my buddies? Sir, you have a problem. You can't have a beer without getting buzzed.
You're
an alcoholic.
You know, in the blogosphere, there are really no credentials to be a blogger.
Yeah.
But there are really, really, really no credentials to be a blogger responder.
The comment poster on the blog.
So beware of what you're reading out there. There's a lot of, well, ridiculousness out there.
Now,
really, really ridiculous.
And I also have to say, sir, you are a party pooper. You know what I mean? This study is being celebrated in the beer halls of Bavaria like you wouldn't believe.
You know, I want to talk about something else. We were talking the other day.
I'm enjoying talking about this. Wait, I got one more comment.
Go ahead, bring it.
Among the many comments to this very popular article, this was posted by a guy whose screen name is Bigger Guy. Right? I live next to Big Mike. He drinks a 12-pack after every workout. He weighs 600 pounds, but he's happy.
Well, that comes from a bigger guy. I just have to digress for a second.
Thank God you tune in for your serious news.
I have to digress for just one second.
Go ahead.
I will never forget there was a complaint on one of the blogs about our restaurant. And that, and generally when you go to the blogs, you'll see, our restaurant's great, 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 or terrible, 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 or great, terrible, because the people who generally write on those websites either had a great experience or a terrible experience, and most of the people in between never take the time to go, write a blog. But I will never forget reading, it's got to be 10 years ago now. I'm reading on one of the websites, and they're talking about the chairs in our restaurant. And now, we have very sturdy chairs and really comfortable chairs.
We have pretty expensive chairs,
too. I'm a really big guy, and I'm very comfortable in our chairs. And I will never forget reading the blog of stage left, they have their chairs are so uncomfortable. I was in the chair for a little while, and it felt like it was going to break underneath me. I can't believe that a restaurant of this caliber would have chairs like that. And I'm reading this, and I'm thinking, I don't know where this guy ate. I don't understand. You know, maybe one of the chairs is breaking. Then we didn't know. I'm racking my brain, and then I see that the author is Bald Bull 300. I'm like, okay, then.
Because the chairs aren't designed for bulls.
maybe I figured out what the issue is. But the other day, and I'll take this right to its next logical or illogical place.
This next logical could be his first logical.
The other day, we were talking about fast food and portion sizes and how they're disguising their portion sizes. And people are eating these, right. Still eating these giant portions.
What's called a large today is fully 20 ounces larger than what a large was.
Exactly. So I was thinking about that, and what I realize is that's a segment of what's going on in marketing today. The counterpoint to that marketing is, you know, Chips Ahoy cookies are packaging everything in 100 calorie packs, that these 100 calorie packs have kind of cropped up everywhere. And when you think about the logic of it, it's got to be the most genius marketing that ever could be. Because what have you done? You've shrunk your portion size. You now have to give the consumer less, and you say it's a 100 calorie pack. As far as a consumer goes, What a great position to be in. You now can monitor calories. You now you can have that little snack that you've been craving all day and know that it's not necessarily disrupting the entire diet. It's only 100 calories, which I think is a pretty good barometer for how we intake food. And I think if on the 64-ounce Big Gulp it said 800 calorie pack, how many people do you think would actually order it?
Well, you know, the other thing is with what we know, we've learned from Dr. Stephen Witherly, who is a remarkable food scientist, is that human beings have a hardwired tendency to eat what's in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
So if you get the package, you're going to eat the package. Now, let's face it at home. How many of you really think that a pint of Häagen-Dazs ice cream, especially if you're single, right? How many portions are in a pint of Häagen-Dazs ice cream, Mark?
There are at least two.
Okay, my fiance made me put the pint in the freezer. Put it back right now, because it's a single serving container from my perspective. It's a single serving container.
But the fact of the matter, and what Stephen Witherly said, was the larger the portion, the more we will eat.
Psychologically, we want to finish we want to clean our plates. And if they sold half pints of Häagen-Dazs ice cream, I would buy them, because I could eat a half pint. I cannot eat half of a pint of Häagen-Dazs ice cream unless someone orders me to put it in there.
So you're asking Häagen-Dazs to come out with a half pint?
I think it'd be brilliant. I think it'd be brilliant. But the thing is,
somebody,
you know,
call Häagen-Dazs.
But even they know that quarter pint, it's not really four portions. Quarter pints, that's a Dixie cup. Let's cut that out. Okay, we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. It's 11:15. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. Today, joining us again is a regular contributor of ours, Natalie McLean. She's a Canadian wine expert. She owns NatalieMcLean.com. Her newsletter is NatDecants.com. You can sign up for it and get all sorts of expert advice.
Natalie, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Francis and Mark. Good to be here.
You know, it's that time again, Natalie. It's time to talk about holiday wines. The autumn is upon us, and the holidays are approaching. You have any advice for us?
Oh, sure. I love both Thanksgiving and the holidays in December, because I think They're wonderful times to celebrate with wine.
And get drunk with family. No, I'm kidding. No, never. We only encourage you to drink responsibly.
Of course, but it does depend on what type of relatives you have. With Thanksgiving, especially, if we want to start with that, I think, you know, wine itself is a taste of the harvest, and it's just a wonderful treat to have on the Thanksgiving table. I think, though, that a lot of people get overwhelmed with trying to find one perfect wine for both the turkey and all of those side dishes, so I'm here to help.
Yeah, whenever I'm arguing politics with the relatives, I want to have a bottle of wine in front of me.
Exactly.
Now, see, in the Irish, we have whiskey in front of us. That's why they get a little more heated, though.
That works, too,
Now, let's talk about the kitchen table for the dining room table on Thanksgiving. First of all, we'll talk about champagne in a moment because that's important. Little funny story, by the way. My family, I usually bring the wine for the holidays, but I'm also chronically late, so I bring all the wine except the champagne. They want to be sure they have that while they're waiting for me. So my little advice for you is if you're going to assign someone to bring the champagne, assign someone prompt. Because having it prompt is as important as having great champagne.
Exactly, and I think champagne is a terrific aperitif. Uh-huh. Let your whistle, literally, get those juices flowing while the turkey's finishing cooking. And champagne's also a wonderful way to start the meal, you know, to toast the friends and family around the table. It goes with a lot of starters for a meal, like soup or salad. So it's a great way to start. But you're right, you have to choose someone who gets there early enough.
I think champagne gets kind of a bad rap that we only seem to have it on New Year's Eve, Christmas Eve, Thanksgiving, where champagne, like you just said, is a great starter. It's something that I go to in the middle of the summertime. I go to in February. I start with champagne frequently.
Absolutely. That's a great idea, you know, because I think sometimes we think of champagne as just a luxury drink. Granted, you know, it tends to be more expensive than a lot of other wines, but it's such a wonderful aperitif, and I think it's one of the most food-friendly wines on the planet.
But well, there are lots of less expensive sparkling wines from throughout the world. Spain,
exactly.
Well, let me address that for just a moment. I want to give you one caution that's an old rule, but it's still true. You know, sometimes, you know, there's good wine now that comes with screw caps on it. There are $100 bottles of wine that come with screw caps on it.
Yeah.
Champagne comes with a cork, and the cork has to be made of cork. So if you've got one of those plastic corks, see, if it's plastic, it's not a cork. And the champagne inside is...
It's definitely not a good sign if you're screwing off your champagne.
But it doesn't have to be...
Francis gave me a dirty look.
Oh, my. Family radio program. But the thing about it is, look, if it says the word champagne, it should say the word France somewhere else in the bottle, and you know you have real champagne.
That's right.
But there are great sparkling wines from around the world that don't necessarily need to be champagne. Right, Natalie?
Absolutely. And I think one of the best sources for sparkling wine is California. So, you know, if I look down there, there's just so many great bubblies from, you know, Domaine Carneros, Domaine Chandon, Roederer, Schramsberg.
Jordan makes a sparkling wine.
Jordan, yeah. There's so many good ones. I mean, they're crisp, they're bubbly, and they're usually a good $20, $25 cheaper than non-vintage champagne from France, and I think they taste just as good. They're different. They tend to be fruitier, but they're lovely, lovely bubbly.
I'm going to give two recommendations that Mark and I have for sparkling wines from America, from the United States, and then Natalie, I'm going to ask you for your two,
okay.
Or one at least. One is... not from California at all. It's made by a guy named Tony Soder, who used to own Etude Winery in California, still making the wine there, owns Soder Vineyard in Oregon, and he has a Beacon Hill Rosé Brut that is spectacular.
Not inexpensive, though.
Beacon Hill Rosé.
This would be what you would expect to spend for champagne.
And the other California wine is the Roederer that you mentioned, the Roederer L'Hermitage, is really a delicious California sparkling wine. What are your picks, Natalie?
Well, Roederer for sure. And, you know, there are several champagne companies that have California operations,
sure.
Roederer being one. That's the French Roederer. So they use their expertise and the tradition to jumpstart their California operations. But I think my favorite bubbly from California is a California-made bread born is Schramsberg.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Delicious.
It's such an elegant bubbly. It's right up there for me with the best of French champagne.
I want to give everybody just a little pointer as you're buying sparkling wine from wherever you buy it. Look for the words Method Champenoise on the label. That is a delineation of quality. It means it's made. the same way that the champagne makers from the village of Champagne make their champagne, and it is a tremendous difference in quality than basically the way some of the inexpensive champagne makers make their champagne, which is the same way we make soda.
That's right.
Actually, what you're more likely to see today is method traditionnel.
Yeah, exactly.
But the other thing about a little advice for your champagne, for both safety of opening and enjoyment of champagne, you've heard us talk on this show about how white wines are often drunk too cold in this country. Champagne needs to be cold, right? You think that's like buried in the ice for a while, right?
It does, both for taste and for safety, because if it's not cold enough, it's going to fizz a lot more when you open it. And you're going to lose a lot of wine, maybe an eyeball.
Exactly. Well, probably somebody else's eyeball, but still nothing good for the holidays.
Maybe unless just a tree ornament.
At the very least, point it at your in-laws. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. The time is 11:25.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Catherine Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were, you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys Radio Show and Stage Left. I've just opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission? To live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The matagatta and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standard set by Catherine Lombardi. You see, Catherine Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or CatherineLombardi.com. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants. We're talking with wine expert Natalie McLean of NatalieMcLean.com. Of course, you can link up with her through our website. And we're talking about wine for the holidays. Of course, we begin talking about champagne. Natalie, we talked about champagne being very cold. Why does champagne need to be so cold from a taste perspective? Like, kind of cool champagne, It's cloying for me. It doesn't work for me. Whereas I like Chardonnay a little warmer. I like Sauvignon Blanc maybe a little warmer. Why does champagne need to be so cold?
You know, I've wondered about that too, but I think it's to do with the refreshment and the bubbles.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got this swarm of bubbles passing over your palate, which is very refreshing and one of the reasons why champagne goes with so many dishes. But I don't think I'd want a warm swarm of bubbles. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just would taste like warm beer or something. It's probably the same reason we like our beer cold.
No warm swarm. Okay, next question is, and we only have a couple of minutes in the segment. We can pick it up on the other side of the news if we have to break, but one of the big problems with bringing wine for Thanksgiving is the wine that goes with turkey is unlikely to be the wine that goes with cranberry sauce.
Mm.
How do I deal with that?
Well, you know, first of all, if it doesn't work out, have a bun in between. I always say drink what you like. You know, don't get too caught up in the right wine, the perfect wine. But, you know, I do think we can find a happy compromise with berry ripe, fruity, juicy, generous red wines, especially like Pinot Noir, Beaujolais, Gamay, even a California Zinfandel. What we're getting there is the berry ripeness that'll moisten the turkey. Turkey tends to be a dry meat, at least the way we do it at our house, probably not the right way, but we make up it for it with wine. And the other reason is that those reds that I just mentioned don't have a lot of mouth-drying tannins, so they're not clashing with the turkey. But because they have that berry juiciness, I do find that they'll go with more of those side dishes. So cranberries is tough, but there's a lot of dishes on the table that have a touch of sweetness. So you need a generous berry-ripe wine. If you're going to whites, you need probably something that's a touch off-dry, like a German Riesling.
And don't be afraid to use pork stuffing, the ultimate palate cleanser.
There you go. That's a great tip.
We want something that's very, very nice.
Oh, please, you're fired.
The Zinfandel, California Zinfandel, which I want to talk about American Zinfandel after the news, and what you can bring to the holidays is just a good, simple wine to bring over if you're going somewhere or if you're having people with you. One of the ways that we suggest making sure that everybody gets to have a little bit of a voice in what it is they drink with a meal. We'll be back after the news, 1450 WCTC. Time is 11:30.
C-T-C. Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we're on stage left at Captain Lombardi Restaurants in Brooklyn, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon, reach us through restaurantguysradio.com, or download our podcast on iTunes.
We're talking today with regular contributor Natalie McLean. She has nataliemclean.com. She's a wine expert based in Canada, but her advice is universal. Natalie, we were talking about the holidays, one of the things that I – and what wine to bring with the holidays, because, well, you have a lot of different things. You have a lot of different people at the table whose tastes may be different, and you have a lot of different kinds of flavors that turn up on a holiday meal that may not work well together. We
right.
gave an example of Red Zinfandel as a wine that does work well. One of the things that I suggest people do is if you're going to drink, you know, depending on how large your family is, three or four bottles of red wine over the course of dinner – I like to open three or four different kinds of red wine and put three or four different bottles on the table and let people sort of experiment and go with what they like or how they structure their plate rather than force everybody to have the same thing.
I like to put the cheap ones up front so my relatives will grab those and I'll reach back behind.
Decoy wine.
Oh, I like that. Decoy wines. I like, what do you think about that strategy of holiday dining?
I think that's great. That's treating your wines like a side dish, which I think is an excellent way to do it. Don't get uptight. Just offer, you know, some different wines. And what can be fun is if you put a few, like a couple wine glasses at each place, people can even compare which goes better. Do they like the Zinfandel or the Pinot Noir better with their turkey? And that can be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and surprising. I think sometimes when you actually taste the wines that you've chosen with the food that you've chosen, there are sometimes some surprises there, even for people like us.
And also, when you're at that family dinner table, you don't need to say, well, Mark, you know, I find the tannin structure in this wine to be a little aggressive for the cranberry sauce. A wine at a table should be like, hey, did you try this? What is this? Pinot Noir? Oh, it's delicious. Try it. Oh, I don't like that as well as the other thing. And that becomes part of you sharing a meal. Remember, a bottle of wine is shared family style. When we put together a tasting menu in the restaurant paired with, seven courses of dinner paired with seven different wines, you're looking for us to bring you through a progression, one after the other, very carefully, a point of view that you're adopting and allowing us to take you down a road. That's not what family dining is about. That's usually not what dining in your home is all about.
That's right, yeah. I like the informality of that. And just passing the bottle from person to person is a bit, I don't know, tribal and communal.
And if you want to be really, you know, get into it, you can just drink right from the bottle. Go right ahead. Just wipe it off before
sure.
you pass it to your
left. Depends on your crowd and your relatives.
Well, now, speaking of the crowd and the relatives, here's something that people have a hard time figuring out and ask us all the time. If you're having people over for maybe hors d'oeuvres for a little while, family dinner, how much, and everybody drinks wine, how much wine do we buy? How do we determine how much white and how much red? How do we do that?
Sure. I'd start with how well do you know your group? Do you know if they tend to be, first of all, wine drinkers, or are there a lot of people who like beer or spirits or whatever? Because that's going to tell you the mix.
In my case, they'd say, is the Irish part of the family coming? And then that's which is all of it. And then
I was just about to say, in my case, we'd say, better have a lot of everything.
Yes, that's true. Because, you know, it doesn't go bad. So if you overbuy, that's a good point. You can always save it for the next party.
Yeah, not so much with the turkey.
Yes. But so then, if I didn't know, or if I thought it was mostly a wine-drinking crowd, and it's going to be a sit-down meal, we drink more over a sit-down meal than we do at a standing cocktail party only, and we drink more at a long meal, like a multi-course dinner or a long dinner like Thanksgiving. So I would calculate at least an average of a half a bottle of wine per adult, because some people are not going to drink that much. Some people are going to drink a little more, and, of course, you want to be socially responsible and keep everybody's water glass topped up. But that's what I would calculate on average, and I would either do 50-50 red and white or lean a little bit toward the red wines given just the consumption patterns overall today. But, you know, if you know your group, it's better to go with that.
I found that over the years, when I first started in the business 20 years ago, it used to be when you would cater an event or supply the wine for an event, the rule was half a bottle per person for a dinner. And then, you'd adjust it if there was a cocktail hour or if there were children present or you could adjust it. But the basic
formula... Or if the event was going longer.
Right, but the basic formula was for dinner, a half a bottle per person, and it was whites over reds 2-1. That's changed, hasn't it?
I think so. And it may be just the crowd I'm running with, but I do think more and more people are drinking red because of the health benefits, because mm-hmm. we're more wine savvy these days, so we're experimenting with the flavors that red offers and that sort of thing.
A lot of wine drinkers start with sweet wine and start with white wine, and then over time, as they become used to wine, to a novice wine drinker, sometimes red wines can seem bitter because of the tannins.
Right.
But I think that we as a nation, down here in the States anyway, I've watched people's palates change because,
sure enough,
we used to sell whites over reds 2-1, mm-hmm. and now it's about 50-50.
You're even selling more red than
that. Yeah, no, it's true, especially at a Thanksgiving dinner party.
I
think that's really fascinating.
And with the popularity of Pinot Noir after Sideways, it's the perfect turkey match. I think a lot of people will be up for trying it if they haven't.
Yeah, I completely agree. Mm-hmm. How do we deal with... Go ahead, Mark.
Natalie, what do you do when somebody brings you a bottle of Absolute Plunk? What do you do? It's Thanksgiving Day.
Yeah.
Here, I've just brought you the homemade blueberry wine. What do you do in that scenario?
I'd say, thank you so much. This is so special. I'd really like to save this for some other opportunity, some other occasion. I don't know. You could open it on the table, especially if you're going to have multiple bottles.
Mm-hmm. And then when they go to the bathroom, pour half of it out.
Right. You need a well-watered fern there in the living room or the dining room. If it's casual and you got multiple bottles open, just put it out there and people can try it if they want.
Why is the dirt around this ficus all red?
No. I am of the opinion of open it and serve it to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No.
Make them drink their own wine.
That's it.
Yeah.
No. Well, the other thing is, we've just struck fear into the hearts of many of our listeners.
Certainly our friends who bring wine over to our house struck fear in.
You look at it, and what I recommend is you take the bottle, you look at it incredulously and say, are you kidding? I just realized how snobby we sound. My God, what jerks we are. This is the holidays. Where's Tiny Tim? But how does someone who doesn't, we're in the business. We know a lot about wine. We're enthusiasts.
Let's take the other perspective, it's easy to be gracious and accept a bottle of wine, but let's take the other perspective.
Yeah, say you know a little bit
about wine. You're a novice
and
you're buying wine for...
And you're going over Mark and Francis's house for Thanksgiving. Look, you don't have to spend $100, but how do you go and select a bottle of wine that's, appropriate? What's your criterion?
Well, again, if you know your host's tastes, then look for something that they like. You could, if you wanted, call ahead and say, I'd love to bring you a bottle it depends on how presumptuous you feel, but you could say, I'd love to bring you a bottle for dinner. What are you serving? Could I help? Could I contribute to the wines for dinner? And then your host has the option to say, that would be great. I'd like an X, I've got these wines planned out or whatever. And then so you bring a bottle. If you're bringing a bottle for dinner, I'd also suggest bringing one for the cellar as a gift because as the guest, you're going to be consuming the bottle you bring. So mm-hmm. I would also bring one a similar one for their cellar.
There's a funny. Piece of etiquette that goes along with bringing a bottle of wine to someone's house when you're invited to a holiday party. I remember last year I was invited to a holiday party. I didn't know exactly what I was getting myself into. I went as a guest. And I brought a bottle of wine, but I knew I was going to, a wealthy person's house. And there is, if you read about this, I remember reading about it years ago, and it's very true. I was taught in my culture, blue-collar, fireman, Irish Catholic, working class culture, you don't show up at someone's house, my mother would say, with your arms dangling. You bring something when you're invited over someone's house. Among the upper classes, to a really nice party, you don't. It's actually a bit of a faux pas. Mm-hmm. So I wind up in this house with I ring the doorbell and it's like the church bells are ding dong. The butler opens the door and we walk into the formal receiving parlor. And
you're announced.
Right, and there's this big Christmas party and they're serving, great Grand Cru Burgundy and this beautiful caterer and the Christmas tree looked like something out of the Nutcracker Suite on stage on the New York City Ballet. And I was like, here, I brought you a bottle of wine. It's just, and it, but you know, there is that difference in you know, middle class culture, and my values are middle class values, I think, for the most part. And you know, but there, you don't always show up with a bottle of wine. I find that fascinating.
Yeah, that's true. And in Paris and probably other august households, you send flowers either before the party or after the next day, because there's a thing about not thrusting, you know, a bouquet into your host's hands, and then he or she has to run off and get a vase or whatever, unless they have a butler, of course. But it's just a really classy thing to do to send it before the party or after.
It's really wild. It's just, I gotta, well, when I have my august mansion, anyone who wants to bring me a bottle of wine can do so. We'll be back in just a moment talking more with Natalie McLean about wines and the holidays and the holiday traditions about wine in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. The time is 11:46.
I think it's great that more and more restaurants are offering larger selections of wine by the glass. Unfortunately, I often find those by-the-glass wines flat or spoiled. It's been my experience that most wine preservation systems just don't work, until now. The Vinfinity system was invented by Armando Luis, a mechanical engineer with over 25 years' experience in the wine industry. Vinfinity has three U.S. patents, but it's so simple I could kill myself for not inventing it first. Vinfinity creates a precise vacuum in the bottle that preserves the wine. Too much vacuum or too little and the wine is damaged. Vinfinity never needs gas and requires little maintenance. One Vinfinity system preserves any number of wines. We use just one system for both of our restaurants, and we're not alone. Some of the best restaurants in the country are taking on the Vinfinity system. The guest gets a large selection of wines by the glass in great condition, and the restaurant eliminates waste. Tell your favorite restaurant about it. If you own a restaurant, install it. Find out more at VinfinitySystem.com or call 201-988-5953.
Hey everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, talking with wine expert Natalie McLean about wines for the holidays. One of the things that people, Natalie, sort of, I caution people about is I'll always remember, and we talked about Zinfandel for the holidays. Now, people I remember came into the restaurant one night, and we do a dinner every other year called the Seven Deadly Zins, Seven Zinfandels, right?
Great.
And it's a fabulous dinner, and these people had come in the night before, and we had sort of experimented with a lot of the dishes and had them ready to go, and it was a party of 12, and they said, Francis, we want to do something great, you know, and I said, you know what, honestly, I could probably, this dinner we're going to do tomorrow night for 75 people, I could probably pull it off for a reasonable facsimile of it tonight. Do you want your own private wine dinner? And they said, yes, absolutely, we'll go and do this. Well, toward the end of the dinner, I had to really caution them about slowing down their alcohol consumption. Because one of the things that's was these Zinfandels are 15% alcohol, some of them, 15.5% alcohol, whereas, say, a red Burgundy might be 13% alcohol, whereas a German white might be 9% alcohol.
When you go in a normal progression of wines, well, some of those wines may be 15% alcohol, but some of them may be 8 or 9% alcohol. When you're just kind of hammering away at the 15% alcohols the whole night,
it means is when you are drinking, you can have half as many glasses of Zinfandel on average as you can of a German white Cabernet because there's twice as much alcohol in it. And wines overall, seemingly red wines especially, are getting more and more alcohol. What's your advice for a host or hostess to manage that and manage people's expectations and make sure people can get themselves home safely?
That's an excellent point. I agree. I just written an article for my website on the increasing levels of alcohol. And I think it's worrisome, not just for being socially responsible, but also for taste, because when you get that hot alcoholic taste, it overwhelms a lot of the other aromas and flavors that make wine such a pleasure. But to be a good host, if you are having a long evening or, you know, a sit-down dinner or a cocktail party, try to look for some wines that are either in the lower end or at least mid-range, you know, the 12-13%, which is now considered average, so that, you know, that'll help, but also make sure that people have their water glasses filled up constantly so that they're not having to slake their thirst just on wine and alcohol. That's one thing we do here when we, you know, my husband and I, say, have a dinner party, it's really important so that because sometimes people don't even realize how much they're drinking because you're topping up their glasses, they're talking. So that can be an issue. So you want to slow things down that way.
See, in college, we could just take everybody's keys on the way in.
Yeah, but they have to get home for the kids now. Your friends are older. You know, the other thing that I think is appropriate is you can point out to your guests, just as a matter of conversation and discussing the wine, that certain wines have a higher alcohol content than other wines. Again, people drinking German wines, they're very quaffable, mm-hmm. and they're less dangerous. And I just I find that it's interesting to help raise people's awareness of what it is that we're drinking from an alcohol perspective.
Well, I'll frequently have Belgian beers available at my house for events and parties and things like that, and I just because they're one of the things in the world that I really adore. And people need to be careful. If you're used to drinking American beers at 3, 4%, and all of a sudden you're drinking these Belgian beers at 8, 9, 10, 11, 12%, there's a whole different level of alcohol and potential danger that comes with that.
Sure. And I think during the holidays, people tend to imbibe more. It's festive, it's celebratory, and so on. So it's also a great idea, I think, to encourage people to take a taxi or cab to your house.
It's why I'm very grateful there's a brand new hotel across the street from my restaurants.
That's convenient.
It is indeed.
Hey, here's another wine pairing pitfall. One of the things that's difficult is people often ask at home, how do I pair a wine? And in restaurants, people run into this problem as well. How do I pair a wine with a salad?
You know, I'm a determined hedonist, so there's no dish that can't go with wine. I think vegetables and salads present unique challenges because they don't have the proteins that meat does, and proteins dance with tannins in red wine. They just bind together and go happily off across the dance floor. But with salads and veggies, you are often talking about strong herbal flavors. So I look for a wine I call them green wines. Green wine and green food go together. And by a green wine, I mean those that are crisp, they have lots of acidity, herbal flavors. New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc is like salad in a glass, I think. An Austrian Grüner Veltliner, another good choice. Even a German Riesling has often the flavors and the lovely acidity that will go well with veggie dishes.
I think that people often neglect white wines. I think people get into wines and they start with sweet wines and then they'll go to white wines and then they'll go to red wines. And each time saying, oh, well, I don't really drink white wines anymore. Now I'm serious about red wines. What the variety of white wines, some of them, you mentioned the German Grüner Veltliner or the Austrian Grüner Veltliner or Austrian or German Rieslings.
Yes.
Some of these wines are really, they're endlessly interesting. And you know, I always say that German Riesling especially operates on like a Shakespearean play. If you don't know anything about wine at all, you're like, wow, that's a sweet, fruity beverage. Delicious. But you can find German Rieslings that at the same time, if you're a serious wine geek, you can be like, holy cow, look at that.
That's right. Yeah, they have such versatility. They're one of the wines that I recommend for many dishes. And in fact, on my website, I have like a little wine and food matcher, an interactive tool where you can just plug in the dish or plug in the wine and it'll spit out not literally spit out, but it'll tell you which wines or foods go with it. So I've tried to simplify that, but you know, for a lot of dishes, I kept putting in German Riesling, German Riesling.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, yeah, I think I'm in a rut here, but it does go so well with so many dishes.
Hey, listen, Natalie, we need to leave it there. Thanks for your advice for the holidays.
Oh, thanks, guys. You have a festive one yourself.
Well, Natalie, thanks so much for being with us and giving us advice for wine and the holidays. We hope that you have some happy holidays, and we'll see you again soon. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. It's 11:55. Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. We were talking with Natalie McLean about entertaining and wine at home for the holidays. One of the things that I find is an important thing is to manage people's expectations of alcohol. And look, I know how to handle my liquor, but I drink on a regular basis. There are some people who, you know, only drink on the holidays. And
I never understood the whole I'm going to go to a Christmas party, and I don't drink all year long, and I'm going to get really, really as drunk as I can get.
I think that sometimes that happens by accident, mm-hmm. to be honest with you. And what you need to do is to help your friends not have that happen by accident. And sometimes, you know, people, it's the holidays, people have been shopping all day, they didn't have breakfast, they're dehydrated, mm-hmm. they get to your house, and they have two glasses of wine, and they're drunk already. something that I
and
always...
And then they lose their inhibitions to get drunker.
Yeah, exactly. So what I say is put out cheese. Put out cheese, cheese, cheese. It's one of the most important things because cheese causes your stomach to close the pyloric valve, which is the valve between your stomach and your large intestine, which keeps that alcohol in your stomach where it's absorbed into your body much more slowly. Then if it goes into an empty stomach, what happens? The alcohol goes right to your large intestine, where it's absorbed four times more quickly.
What's counterintuitive is most people want to put out bread because they say it'll soak up the alcohol, and that's the absolute wrong thing.
Because carbohydrates are absorbed by your large intestine, and the carbohydrates and the alcohol will go right through to the large intestine. You want to offer some people cheese and protein and nuts. Close that pyloric valve, give them something to eat, and be careful with your friends and your loved ones, and make this happy, this holiday season a happy one. Hope you've enjoyed the hour with the Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. The time is 12 noon.